been through the lockout and the meaningless spring training games, but from here on out, things actually matter. The Toronto Blue Jays begin their 2022 season in mere hours, and Ethan Diamandis and I are here to break things down as your SI.com beat writers covering the team. In this episode, we hit on the opening day roster, some last-minute injury news and notes, and a few keys to the season. We then bring in our resident Texas Rangers expert to break down Marcus Semien's return to Toronto and the opening three games of the Blue Jays season. Thanks for listening, and enjoy this episode of the Inside the Blue Jays podcast. All right, Ethan, we are now hours away. We've been moving closer and closer to baseball season, and it's basically finally here. The roster just dropped. We know who's going to be playing for the Blue Jays. What's kind of your first takeaways from seeing the full 28?
Yeah, we're finally here, and thankfully, well, maybe not thankfully, but there are no surprises on the roster. We kind of knew Toronto was going to go with, you know, their rotation was set from the very beginning. From the moment, you know, Yusei Kikuchi signed this offseason, they're going with 10 relievers. We kind of knew that, you know, a few days ago. The most interesting part, I guess, is that they're carrying three catchers. So Zach Collins, who was acquired in a trade for Reese McGuire from the White Sox not too long ago, he will be that third catcher on the roster. And, you know, you and I have talked a lot about the importance of having a third catcher, I think, to maximize Alejandro Kirk's utility. Gosuke Kato is another guy who's on the fringe, but again, we kind of knew that he was going to be on the team a few days ago. So I guess the biggest takeaways, yeah, are that Collins is going to be, you know, that left-handed bat off the bench. He'll probably catch, you know, I get the feeling that he's going to be maybe also a part-time first baseman. Toronto likes his offensive profile, certainly better than they like his defensive profile. And he's got, you know, a bit of power. And I think, you know, the front office thinks they can tap into that a little bit, maybe make some changes. But there were some injury announcements, Mitch, if you want to inform our listeners on what we know on that regard.
Yeah, so the roster kind of came together and there weren't really any cuts aside from Greg Bird because of two kind of injuries in the bullpen slash rotation. Nate Pearson got mono late in camp. It was diagnosed as a non-COVID illness, and then we found out it was mono. And so they say he's day-to-day, but I think anyone who knows someone who's had mono or has had mono knows that that can kind of linger, that can be a little bit longer. Maybe it's more week-to-week, but Ross Atkins did say that Nate was feeling better today, could return to baseball activities in the next few days. Whether or not he has to do another ramp-up, whether or not he would do rehab starts in AAA will kind of be defined by when he comes back. If it's a two-week thing, they might have to re-stretch him out. If it's a one-week thing, he might be able to go to AAA or come up immediately and help the bullpen. And then another bullpen arm or potential bullpen arm, Ryan Borucki, was placed on the injured list to start the year, but it sounds like he is on his way back. I believe it was a hamstring injury. He's already started his rehab progression. Atkins said he could be available to the team in the next few days. And so I think they might send him to AAA because we know he's out of options. They can send him on a rehab assignment, which will help give them a bit of runway to see what they have with Borucki and push that decision down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you imagine that, you know, Pearson's illness, you know, does that take him out of contention as a starter for the rest of the season, you think, or do you think it's maybe too early to make a decision like that?
Yeah, I asked Ross Atkins exactly that, and he was pretty clear. He said, no, it's not going to impact how they're going to use him this year, and they've been pretty adamant they see him as a long-term starter, and they're trying to stretch him out to be a starter this year. So I would imagine if he comes back, if everyone's healthy in the big leagues, if they're fine with their pitches, if Ross Stripling is logging the innings they need in either a sixth starter role or in a bulk man role, then they can put Pearson in AAA, stretch him out, and then use him as the first call-up when they need a lot of innings at the major league level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pearson is for sure one of Toronto's, you know, and we've talked about this on other podcasts, he's this weapon of mass destruction that, you know, they haven't found a use for yet. He's definitely an X factor for Toronto, of course, and unfortunately, he hasn't had the healthiest career to start. It's the second opening day that in a row where he'll start on the injured list. But there are some more refined keys to Toronto's success this year, I think. And you and I have kind of nailed out some predictions and some key factors that we think will be pretty important to Toronto's success this year. Mitch, how about you start us off with one of your keys to victory?
Yeah, and I think this may seem obvious, but I think depth is going to be the key for this Blue Jays team. I think you look at the team and specifically the rotation, and it looks like they have a lot of depth. They have a really solid five. Then they have Ross Stripling, and they got Nate Pearson after that. They even have guys like Bowden Francis in AAA who could step up and make big league starts this year. But I think the depth on the hitting side is going to be pretty crucial, and in the bullpen. We saw how much lack of bullpen depth killed them last year. But on the hitting side, the bench is not really the strength of this team, with Espinal, Coteau, and Tapia and Collins can give you solid at-bats. But then after that, if it's not Gabriel Moreno, if it's not some of these young guys, maybe Nathan Lucas comes up, Otto Lopez, we found out it's going to start the season on the minor league IL. Those guys all kind of have question marks. And the really good teams in baseball, like the Dodgers and the Rays, are able to just call guys up, plug them in, and them not be replacement level, them be solid producing players. So the Blue Jays are going to have to either stay really healthy or prove that their depth pieces can be solid big leaguers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned the depth pieces, and we'll get to that in a minute just in terms of arms and relievers. But I think one of the more exciting keys to victory, you know, during this season, and especially during this opening stretch in April, where Toronto has a very difficult schedule to start the season, I think it's going to be what we get out of Matt Chapman, right? He was an acquisition, you know, that's touted highly for his defense, and he does it quite well, probably better than any other third baseman in the American League. But I'm really, really interested to see what he does on offense. Now, it's kind of been a tale of two halves sort of to Chapman's career. You know, the first 3 years of his career, he looked pretty good. You know, he was hitting for power. He had the slugging around 500, and actually, so maybe not two halves, but the first few years of Chapman's career, he was high up there in slugging. You know, he was putting up those 800 OPSs, and then last season, not the case. So his slugging kind of plummeted. He was around a league average hitter in terms of OPS plus, and the strikeouts went up. Now, Chapman admitted to us that, you know, he wasn't totally healthy last season, and there was some stuff he was working through over the last few years. Now, I think he's a guy that has the potential to go and hit those 36 home runs again. He's somebody who is going to benefit from a better ballpark in Rogers Center. And I think you remember we heard that Josh Donaldson was actually speaking to, you know, a co-beat writer of ours and Rob Longley of the Toronto Sun. He mentioned that in an interview with Donaldson. Donaldson said, "Hey, listen, Chapman's going to do great things at Rogers Center. They got that short porch. Like, he's going to hit lots of home runs." So I think if Chapman can return to that 2019 form or anywhere close, you know, and play the incredible defense that he's capable of, I think it's going to be a very, very influential factor for Toronto's lineup.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's interesting with Chapman because he's kind of flashed this 350 OBP huge power season. But he doesn't necessarily have to be that. I think he can kind of be what he was in spring training. And spring training stats are, take them for what you will, but hit most of his OPS came from a high slugging percentage. And he's never really been able to break 540, 550 slugging in his career, but that might be a factor of playing in Oakland, not Oakville, sorry. But so I think if he can get close to 600 in Toronto, which we've seen guys take that slugging jump in Toronto, he can still be the heavy strikeout, play good defense guy, and he'll be a great offensive player and a great defensive player on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's really no need to cut down on the strikeouts. I mean, obviously you would like to, but you know, if he has the pop to counter that, I would say, yeah, emphasize the power, worry less about the contact. If this is the type of hitter he is, and if this is the hitter he understands he needs to be, then I guess you just let Chapman roll on that front.
Mm-hmm. And another kind of similar key is on a new face, or one of the new face, and then a couple other guys. But I think the back end of the rotation is going to be super important. Obviously, Jose Berríos, Kevin Gausman are going to be crucial for the Jays season. But I think what the Jays get out of Ryu, Manoah, and Kikuchi, it could define how good this team can be, especially in the regular season. I think they're we could see seasons where Ryu, Manoah, and Kikuchi log a bunch of innings, have mid threes ERA, maybe even better. Like, these are all guys who I don't think would be unreasonable to see getting Cy Young votes at the end of the year. But they're also guys who we don't have a huge sample with Manoah, but I think people trust him. And but also with Ryu and Kikuchi, these are guys who could have ERAs that start with five, and it wouldn't be terribly surprising. There's a lot of variance in their 2022 outcome. So I think that back end of the rotation will define kind of the roof of this team.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you, we, as Jays fans are probably pretty excited with the Kikuchi signing. I think there is like a significant amount of risk to that. Kikuchi's a guy who has excellent stuff, and he's, you know, had it all together for short spurts, but he's never really had the overarching numbers to support, you know, the hype that maybe followed him out of Japan, right? So I think Toronto recognized that, and that's probably why he came at the price that he did for 3 years, 36. But I think, like, you know, Steven Matz was last year, he's well worth the flyer. And if you're in a position where you can take a risk on Kikuchi as your, like, undisputed number five starter, I think that speaks a lot about the strength of your rotation.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, it is really upside. Like, if you get on the aggregate, the season Kikuchi gave them last year, which I think was a high fours ERA, you take that. That's a fifth starter who can log innings. And with this offense, it'll give them the chance to win. But you don't want the second half Kikuchi. And I think that's what people could be worried about. If you get the first half, amazing. You got a Cy Young candidate. You got an all-star. If you get the second half, then you got to start worrying. I think they're hoping for things to fall kind of somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm. And the rotation, the lineup, you know, they've both been kind of revamped, and they've been, they've had lots of support added, but the bullpen gets a little bit forgotten. And if Jays fans were living and dying on every pitch last year, they probably still have nightmares about the bullpen, because there was a stretch, you know, in May and June where it felt like, you know, Charlie would look into the bullpen and there, who knows what would be coming out of there. It was a revolving door of names, but now they have stability. And I think there's kind of that sentiment in the clubhouse among the roster that, you know, we have the guys, we have them this time. You know, we don't need to make trades to find guys. We have a core. And that starts with leaders in Tim Mayza and Jordan Romano. I spoke to Tim Mayza today, and he, you know, the established veteran that he is, believe it or not, he is the longest tenured Blue Jay, I believe, since 2018 or 2017. I'd have to double check. But, you know, he said, I understand the criticism from last year regarding the bullpen. And he said, you know, we understand that when you fall a few games short that, you know, people can point fingers, but he said the sentiment as a group is that they're hungry and that this bullpen has a chip on its shoulder, and they want to be able to prove people wrong. And so I think, you know, that's the key. That's the key for Toronto. It's the lineup will do its thing. The rotation, you know, even if Kikuchi isn't, you know, doesn't meet the expectations, you know, they'll still be really strong. I think the bullpen needs to come strong out of the gate. And I think they need to, you know, hold the games that they're supposed to. And there's going to be blown saves. There's nothing you can do about that. But if Toronto's bullpen can keep things calm and not have the explosions that they did last year, the meltdowns, so to speak, I think Toronto will have one of the more complete teams in the American League, if not all of baseball.
Yeah, I think you mentioned getting started out of the gates. I think that's going to be crucial. We both know how mental kind of baseball is. And all of the relievers kind of you've talked to and we've talked to are free to admit that, or willing to admit that they know the bullpen was a problem last year, especially early in the year and midseason during that really rough patch. They had all admit it, and that's why they have the chip on their shoulder. But if they get off to a bad start, you could see that kind of really getting back to them and really messing with them. Mm-hmm. So I think if they get off to a hot start, even with this really tough early schedule that the Jays have, it'll help build confidence and help show the group that they're as stable as they think they
can
be.
Yeah, no doubt. If you know, let's say they come out in the opening series and they have a meltdown, you know, that's comparable to 2021, it will tap into that psychosis of like, holy crap, are we going to go down this, like, this hole again? And I think fans will probably feel the same way. So yeah, that's, I think, stability. And bullpens are so volatile that if you can find some degree of stability, you know, that that's really all you can ask for. And I think Toronto has the core pieces in place to do that. You know, spring training stats, some of the Toronto's relievers didn't do phenomenal in spring training. Obviously, we don't put too much stock into the final numbers. But now that the season begins, Toronto's going to need all three facets. They're going to need their starting rotation. They're going to need the lineup, and they're going to need the bullpen. And on Friday, they kick off the season against the Texas Rangers. It's at Rogers Center. You know, it's a big game. There's going to be lots of hype around the team. It's Toronto's first home opener since 2019, true home opener at Rogers Center with full capacity, 50,000 fans. And so, you know, we decided to bring in an expert from the other side, from the Texas Rangers, another excellent baseball journalist, and you'll get to meet him in just a few moments. We are joined by Chris Halleck, the beat writer for InsideTheRangers.com or SI.com/MLB/Rangers. He does a great job covering Texas. He's been writing about the spring training storylines. He'll cover the team throughout the year. He's also a great follower on Twitter at Chris Halleck. So how's it going, Chris? Thanks for joining us.
It's going great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
I guess we'll start off the top by the Rangers were kind of one of the more fun teams this offseason. A lot of changes, a lot of new faces. How would you kind of describe what would be a successful season for Texas this year?
Any improvement from 102 losses would be good. And on paper, they're definitely in line to do that. I mean, you add Corey Seager, you add Marcus Semien, that alone, I mean, that's arguably the best middle infield in baseball. Obviously, you can make arguments for some others, but it's definitely up there as one of the best middle infields in baseball. And the best teams are typically built well up the middle. The Rangers address three or four positions up the middle. They, you know, in addition to Seager and Semien, they traded for Mitch Garver. So they upgraded their offense behind the plate. Center field's the only, you know, position up the middle they didn't address. But Adolis Garcia, you know, rookie of the year candidate last year is going to play there this year. So they're pretty solid up the middle. And the lineup is definitely better. It needed to be better. They were near the bottom of the American League in just about every offensive category. And the lineup, you look at last year's opening day lineup versus this year's, it looks a lot better. So it's difficult. I mean, you know, whenever you see a team spend a record amount of money in an offseason, you're thinking, okay, this team might be a contender now. And the fact of the matter is the Rangers still had so many holes that even with everything that they spent, they're probably still not going to be in the postseason picture this year. Not saying it isn't possible. You know, expanded postseason obviously increases those chances. However, you know, that they only won 60 games last year. And John Daniels, the president of baseball operations and general manager Chris Young, have both been very transparent saying it's hard to make up 30 to 40 wins in one off season. And so they don't want to put any limits on what the team can do, but at the same time, they also understand that even a record turnaround like what the Rangers did in 1974 when they had a 27-win swing would only give them 87 wins. And even then you're kind of on the border there. So anything I think close to 80 wins, I think would be a huge win for the Rangers, a huge step forward. That'd be almost 20-win improvement. That would be big. They still have a lot of pitching they need to figure out. They have a lot of young pitching, but it's a lot of unproven pitching. And so, that's pretty much the biggest thing keeping the Rangers out of the postseason right now. The lineup is, I think, good enough to kind of get them there if they had a really stacked rotation, and it's just not there yet. Could be there. They have a lot of pitching right now. Look at guys like Dane Dunning and Taylor Hearn, you know, young pitchers being given a shot in the rotation now. And then down the line, you've got Jack Leiter and Cole Wynn and Owen White and Ricky Vernasco, you know, a bunch of really exciting pitching prospects that could end up coming up in the next few years. So the rotation could be good in 2023, 24, 25, but again, that's not this year. So Rangers will be better for sure. But maybe not quite a postseason team yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chris, you mentioned the team is a work in progress, right? They're building up the middle. They had Seager, they had Garver behind the plate, but you know, they also took one of the former Blue Jays, one of, you know, a guy who had very quickly in Toronto become a fan favorite. And when you turn in a season like Marcus Semien did, that's not surprising. I guess, why do you think he chose Texas and why is that such a good fit for him?
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. I mean, he was the first to sign between, you know, him and Seager. But I think Semien signed knowing that the Rangers were about to land Seager as well. We kind of got that clue during their press conference that they had the day before the lockout began. They introduced all four of their free agent signings in one day, Cole Calhoun, those two, and John Gray as well. And I think Semien already kind of knew Seager was about to be on the way. That obviously wasn't finalized yet, but they knew, you know, he knew. And I think the Rangers giving him a seventh year was another big thing. I don't think any other club was willing to go 7 years for Semien. And, you know, given his age, you know, he's north of 30. You understand the way baseball works, you know, not saying it's right or wrong, but the way baseball typically works, you then understand why some clubs probably don't go to that seventh year, and the Rangers are willing to do that. And the Rangers also knew that they had to overpay in order to get guys like Semien and Seager. They had to, okay, if we're going to land a guy like Semien, we're going to have to give them a seventh year. We're going to have to do something that no other club is doing. When it came to Seager, it was kind of the same thing, but with Marcus, I think giving the seventh year is a big thing. Obviously having Corey Seager, you know, probably on the way as well was another big thing. Marcus has a lot of respect for Corey. I think he even said, you know, during the beginning of spring training that Corey Seager is his favorite player. So, you know, you hear stuff like that and that has, you know, Marcus excited. And, you know, second base was a position he could play, obviously, just like he did in Toronto. And if it didn't work out with Seager, you know, shortstop was obviously going to be the position he'd play. You know, he'd get the chance to do that again. But obviously, he's comfortable enough to play second base. You know, did pretty well last year, hitting 45 home runs and winning a gold glove. So, yeah, I think just the Rangers, it was a combination of things. You know, just the Rangers being willing to do the, you know, to give him the financial commitment. And I really do think that Chris Young, the GM, has done a really good job in really relaying the message of what this team is doing, being open and honest and transparent, being like, listen, we're probably not going to compete, you know, this year, but this is our plan. This is what we're doing. And Marcus bought it. You know, they got guys like Marcus and Corey Seager to buy into that. And, you know, obviously, you know, $175 million and $325 million respectively is a lot, you know, a big reason for it. But at the same time, you know, these guys want to win. You know, Marcus wants to win. He's a competitive guy. And I think it's just a combination of things. And I think the Rangers are doing a pretty good job in selling guys like Marcus and Corey on what their plan is. And they're obviously buying into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned the seventh year, and at $175 million, I just don't think Toronto was going to bite at that price. The rest of the market clearly wasn't as interested at pushing that kind of dollar amount as Texas was. But with Marcus, you know, you kind of get a little bit extra off the field, right? You know, he's a well-known leader. He has a strong reputation around baseball. And for the Blue Jays, that was with a guy like Bo Bichette, who, you know, said, Marcus meant everything to me in terms of development and leadership and mentorship. I guess, have you noticed Marcus having any of those impacts on the Rangers roster yet? What are your first impressions on how he might help the clubhouse?
I mean, it's obviously a huge, you know, addition. It was very interesting for him, you know, coming in. You know, he officially signs, you know, December 1st, the lockout begins at midnight, you know, and then he can't talk to his coaches. You know, he can't talk to Chris Woodward. He can't talk to, you know, anybody in the front office. And even then it was really difficult for him, you know, because, you know, guys can all, you know, typically in an offseason, guys can go up to whatever facility, you know, it's Globe Life Field, and they can go, you know, do their workouts there, do their offseason, you know, whatever they need to do. can't go to the ballpark, you know, can't do anything like that. So he had to meet a lot of guys. He actually said that he had worked out previously with Willie Calhoun, Rangers DH, because they're both Bay Area natives. And he actually had Willie Calhoun add him to the text chat so that Marcus could help, you know, inform Rangers players of what was going on with all the CBA negotiations and everything like that. So his first impression, you know, his first introduction to a lot of these players was via text message. So that's difficult to do. You know, you don't really get the first chance to have an impact as a leader until you get to what is a truncated spring training, you know, and that's difficult, you know, and it takes time, you know, to have, you know, to come in and be able to have a familiarity and a comfort level with a lot of, with what is a very young roster. And so, yeah, it's been a challenge, but I think Marcus is going to have, I mean, one of the main reasons why the Rangers were so interested in Marcus was not only what he can do on the field, but what he can do and is well known for off the field. The Rangers very, very much, it kind of went along the same lines with when they were pursuing Clayton Kershaw. They really want, yes, they wanted to add talent, but they wanted to add really, really good character guys. And Marcus is well known to be a really good character guy. And yeah, that it was huge for John Daniels and Chris Young and Chris Woodward. And Chris Woodward is, you know, consistently talked about culture and pushing, you know, a winning culture. And they believe that Marcus is a guy who can embody that and really set the tone for that. And, yeah, I had a chance to ask Marcus a couple times, like how it's been, you know, getting to know guys. You know, I was there during the first week of spring training, and he's like, yeah, I'm still kind of getting to know everybody. But, you know, obviously that's going to take time. And once they get into Globe Life Field and the games start matter, you know, the games, you know, really begin to matter. And I think, you know, they'll be able to, you know, jump in and, you know, be able to move forward, and Marcus will establish himself as one of the leaders in the clubhouse. And, yeah, it's something the Rangers are very, very much excited about. And I know a lot of the young Rangers are very excited about it too. Just so that they can have guys like that they can just go to and pick their brain. And, so it's a huge addition for the Rangers in terms of culture as well.
You mentioned when the games start to matter, they start to matter in just a couple days. Now on Friday, the Texas will come to Toronto and we will see John Gray on opening day. I feel like he kind of went forgotten amongst some of the other additions, but I saw you wrote about kind of a new or changed slider. Are we going to expect a whole new John Gray on Friday?
I don't know about a whole new John Gray. I mean, he's still going to, you know, he's still going to attack you with the fastball. He's still going to attack you with the slider. And I mean, his slider before was a good pitch for him. It just didn't generate the swing and miss that he desired. You know, he got too many foul balls with it, and he really wants that to be a wipeout pitch. And he talked about if he can command his fastball, the slider, really this new slider, which is more of a sweeping motion, really becomes more of a weapon, because if you can command the fastball, hitters have to sit on that. And then all of a sudden they have a slider coming up that's breaking, you know, 2 feet, you know, 2.5 feet, you know, away from them or into them, you know, whether it's a righty or lefty. And when he was able to do that in his final tune-up, you kind of saw Milwaukee hitters not be able to do that. And he was able to do it to both righties and lefties. He made Christian Yelich, a lefty hitter, look pretty silly with one. So I don't think you're going to see a whole new John Gray, still kind of the same guy, but this slider is definitely something that I think he's excited about. He completely bought into it whenever the Rangers approached him about it. And so he's a talented pitcher. I mean, I understand you go look at his numbers in Colorado, and I think that's all I need to say right there is his numbers in Colorado. I mean, we're not only talking about the ballpark being a hitter's paradise, but at the same time, it's the back and forth. It's okay, I'm pitching in Coors Field, now I'm pitching in Dodger Stadium. I'm pitching in Coors Field, now I'm pitching in Petco Park. It's like this constant back and forth, and having to adjust. And, you know, one start your pitchers, you know, aren't breaking as much because you're in Coors Field, and all of a sudden your pitchers are breaking insanely hard because you're pitching, you know, somewhere near sea level. So it's a huge grind for both hitters and pitchers, for players who are playing, you know, in Colorado. And so I think the Rangers know that, okay, we give John Gray an opportunity to pitch in you know, a similar environment in just about every single, you know, every single start, especially when he pitches at home. It's more of a, you know, pitcher friendly ballpark. You know, Globe Life Field, I think, is, you know, kind of rated a little bit more as pitcher friendly, definitely deeper gaps, you know, in center field. But I think you're still going to see a guy who definitely wants to prove that he belongs near the top of a rotation, and I think has the stuff for it. And I think just command is going to be a big part of that. And you know, we'll see. I think he might do a little bit better than people expect, just kind of off of what I'm seeing. But again, it's going to be a transition for him, you know, going from Colorado to going to a new place. And so, you know, it'll be interesting, but the Rangers have been pretty good about, you know, bringing in veteran pitchers, and helping make them into something better than they used to be. They did it with Mike Minor. They did it with Lance Lynn. They did it with Kyle Gibson. So it wouldn't shock me if John Gray ends up, you know, becoming a much better version of himself in Texas.
Then after Gray, we'll get, I think it's Dane Dunning and then Martin Perez. Those are two guys the Jays have seen before, but maybe just a quick hit on what we can expect on the Saturday and Sunday games from those guys.
Yeah, Dane Dunning is he's your typical sinker slider guy. He will attack you looking for weak contact, and he can do it with a pretty stout sinker. When he's really on top of it, that thing will have a lot of run and a lot of sink. And then, you know, a pretty good cutter. He throws the slider pretty well and can also mix in a changeup. He'll go after guys. He's not a high velo guy. He usually sits around 92, with his fastballs. And, I mean, he's a young guy. He had some really good stretches for the Rangers, really until August, whenever he dealt with a minor hamstring issue. And then I think he had to spend time on the COVID IL as well. He was, other than Kyle Gibson, the most consistent pitcher in the Rangers rotation. That's not saying much for a team that lost 102 games, but even then, for a young pitcher on a limit, because he was coming off of Tommy John surgery, pretty good stuff. And the Rangers are excited about what he could possibly, you know, become, which is, you know, if he ends up really hitting his potential, he's a back of the rotation guy. And then Martin Perez, obviously the addition of the cutter kind of makes him a little bit of a different pitcher than he used to be when he was with Texas the first time. So it'll be kind of interesting for Rangers fans to see, okay, what new version of Martin Perez is this? But this is a guy the Rangers brought in to eat innings to help lead a very young rotation. There is the possibility. I don't know. I haven't actually checked to see if the probables have been actually set behind Gray. But I do know that Chris Woodward mentioned the possibility of Spencer Howard sliding into that Sunday game. I have to check on that here, like on the fly, but just so they can go righty against a right-handed heavy Toronto lineup. I just don't know if that's been set in stone or not, but with Spencer Howard, former top prospect in the Phillies organization, has really great stuff. Has just had to really work on command and mechanical issues. And the Rangers really like where he's at too. So if you end up seeing Spencer Howard on Sunday, expect a lot of good stuff, you know, pretty electric fastball, really good breaking stuff. It's just, will the command be there?
Yeah, Chris, we're pushing it to the future, to opening day, but I just want to flash you back for just a minute. When Toronto played Texas last year, it was kind of the tale of two series, right? Around this time last year, Toronto played Texas, and, you know, Texas looked better, to be honest, right? Tanner Roark, not Toronto's finest pitcher, was starting early in that series, and Texas hit him hard, and they won that, and then we went to July, and then we kind of saw Toronto hit its stride at that point. And, you know, they outscored Texas 25-2, put a 10 spot on Mike Foltynewicz. I'm wondering kind of, you know, what you remember from those series, and maybe, as, you know, a member of the Rangers media, what your perspective on Toronto was, you know, from the outside.
Well, I can tell you right now that when anybody in the DFW Metroplex or Rangers fan nation or whatever it is, you know, the fan base, when they think of Toronto, they think of the playoff series in 15 and 16. They also think about the Rookie Odor punch of Jose Bautista. that's usually the first thing that comes to mind. And I think I'm even going to be doing a story on Matt Bush here later, who recently made the Rangers bullpen. And I mean, for Matt Bush, his first memory, I mean, he's like first game in Toronto. He's like, that was part of my favorite, you know, time of being a Ranger before, you know, before he started dealing with a slew of arm issues, because he was one of the main bullpen guys in those playoff series. So he fondly remembers, you know, playing in the postseason, you know, and so that's pretty interesting. But last year, yeah, when Toronto played in Globe Life Field, I think it was the first home series of the season for the Rangers. The Rangers were, you know, kind of right out of the gate. And like a lot of young teams, they come out firing on all cylinders. Not necessarily like, oh my gosh, this might be a World Series contender, but like they come out with a lot of energy, and they were really able to do that. They were 18-18 through 36 games, you know, and then all of a sudden they just fell off a cliff. And that time in July, especially right after the All-Star break, the Rangers really struggled in a lot of facets of the game, in hitting and pitching. Nick Solak, you know, a guy who played pretty well in that home Toronto series early in the season. I'd have to go back and look. I don't even think he was maybe even on the roster, because he was optioned to AAA at some point, you know, during the summer. I just don't remember if it was before or after the Toronto series in July, the one that was played in Buffalo. But it was the Rangers team in April and July, they weren't the same teams. Obviously the one in July was a little bit closer to the team that you know, overall body of work, 102 losses. That was a little bit closer to who the Rangers were, as opposed to who they were in April. April was obviously a lot more exciting baseball in Texas. You know, they had Dak Prescott at a game, and they ended up winning. And outside of a no hitter, you know, from Joe Musgrove, you know, the Rangers did pretty well for the first month of the season. So it was just two different teams. Pitching was so inconsistent. You know, Mike Foltynewicz was kind of a necessary. I don't want to say necessary evil. That's not a good phrase, but he was a necessary arm in the rotation, whether he was producing or not. The Rangers just needed innings. They had so many pitchers, so many young pitchers who couldn't go deep. And even some of those young pitchers like Dane Dunning, who were healthy, had restrictions because they were just coming off of Tommy John surgery or something like that. So they couldn't go 90 to 100 pitches. So it was just, last year was a mess for the Rangers. It really was. So when you see one team in April and one team in July, you know, and then you see they finished with 102 losses at the end of the year, you're kind of like, okay, that kind of makes sense. They were just kind of all over the place. And that's exactly why you might've seen one team in April and another team in July. I think it'll be a little more even keeled this year though.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned, you know, the Rougned Odor punch and those playoff series, because the timing's sort of right in that Toronto will finally be allowed to have max capacity at that, you know, colossus of a stadium where we'll have 50,000 people there. So that'll be interesting. I guess, you know, Toronto is a team that, you know, lost some big stars in Semien, in Ray, and Steven Matz to a lesser extent, but still an important guy. But, you know, they added a pitcher, they added Kevin Gausman, they shored up the bullpen a little bit. You know, Toronto's hoping to get a whole season out of George Springer. I guess from your outsider perspective, what do you think of the Blue Jays? What do you think maybe they're capable of this year?
They're right up there. I look at the lineup and I'm just like, man alive, that is a difficult lineup. If the Rangers can win, if they can just avoid a sweep, I think they can come out of Toronto 1-2. I think that's a success for them, honestly. Just because you just look at the lineup and you got Matt Chapman batting seventh, you know, Kevin Biggio batting eighth, probably, you know, I don't know those, but just that middle of the lineup with Vlad Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez and Bo Bichette and, you know, Lourdes Gurriel. And I mean, it's a really, really deep lineup. That's going to be difficult for a really young Rangers staff to navigate, you know, whether that's a veteran guy in John Gray, who, I mean, a lot of starting pitchers are limited, you know, at this point, just because of the shortened spring training. You know, John Gray is not going to be able to go, you know, 90 to 100 pitches. You know, he's probably going to be, you know, right around that 80, 85 mark. Maybe he hits 90, but I mean, even if he's very efficient, that's no more than six innings. And so you're going to have to rely on a very young bullpen. Yeah, they have some nice veterans. They, you know, brought in Garrett Richards, who will fill a nice multi-inning, role. Greg Holland could end up making the bullpen. They got a couple of veteran guys, but overall, it's still a very young bullpen, and facing a lineup like that, it's going to be really, really difficult for the Rangers. So the lineup really, really is deep, and the rotation is stacked as well. I mean, I'm Rangers perspective, you know, you go in probably looking at Barrios, Gausman and Ryu. That's no walk in the park. Toronto is right up there with just about anybody else. I could very much see them being a legitimate contender for the American League East. They're set up, you know, depending on what they can do at the trade deadline and how they can address any other, depth issues. Obviously you can never have too much pitching. So if they can add some even more pitching depth at the trade deadline, I don't see any reason with that lineup. I don't see any reason why the Blue Jays can't, make a deep playoff run. They're set up for it, and you got to be able to hit and you got to be able to pitch. And I know that's like very, John Madden-ish to say, like, that's very obvious. You have to do both in baseball, but the Blue Jays can hit and they can pitch right now. They can do all those things. They got, good defenders. I mean, they're a pretty complete team right now for sure.
Oh, we know anything can happen in baseball, and they still have to play the game. So I think there is a lot of hype around this team in Toronto, but we'll see what happens if they lose on opening day, if the whole city burns to the ground. But
it's just one game. It's so funny. And to be fair, I mean, baseball lore, I guess, opening day does have a different feel, even though it is just one of 162. A lot of people remember the game on opening day. I can even remember, I've lived in, I've only covered the Rangers, so I'm going into my third season. But I can still remember in 2010, the Rangers, actually, they were playing the Blue Jays. I just now put that together. The Rangers opening day went a walk-off win against Toronto in 2010, which was obviously the 2010 season was the first American League pennant for the Rangers. I can remember that. Jared Saltamacchia hits a walk-off, single. It's just funny how you can remember certain things like that just from opening day. So opening day definitely does kind of stand out, even though the Blue Jays could end up losing opening day and still end up winning 98 games or however many. It really, it's just one of 162, but it is kind of funny how opening day just has that separate, baseball's an awesome, awesome sport. And I just love how one game of 162 can mean so much yet means so little.
Yeah. Everyone lives and dies on every single win, and we'll see what tone is set on Friday. It was great for you to come on, Chris. Thank you so much for making some time. Why don't you just let the people know where they can find you and find your work?
You can follow me on Twitter @ Chris Halleck. That's last name is spelled H-A-L-I-C-K-E. And then obviously all of our Rangers coverage is on InsideTheRangers.com or SIA.com/MLB/Rangers. We're going to be all over the Rangers beat this year. So definitely give us a follow. We also cover, Rangers related news that as it pertains to around Major League Baseball as well. Just so that we can, keep, fans, up to date, not only on what's going on with the Rangers, but also what's going on with Major League Baseball. So, cause usually a lot of the big stories that affect Major League Baseball affects all 30 teams. So we definitely want to cover that too. So yeah, that's where you can find our work. Thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it. And looking forward to an exciting baseball season, hopefully.